In Proverbs 10, verse 9, we read, "The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out." It was the British author Samuel Johnson who put it this way, "Integrity without knowledge is weak and useless, and knowledge without integrity is dangerous and dreadful." Welcome to Insight for Living, featuring another message in Chuck Swindoll's series called Character Counts. In the next half hour, you'll hear Chuck deliver a sermon that followed an earthquake near his hometown. Chuck's brush with fear and mortality stirred in him a renewed passion for personal character. He titled his message, "A Plea for Integrity."
Have you noticed that ours is a day of freely bending the rules and rationalizing wrongs? Of course you have. And even a growing number of Christians have bought into that mentality that says, well, grace covers everything, so go ahead and do whatever you want. After all, God understands and forgives. He's a God of grace. Well, the results fall somewhere between embarrassment and downright scandal. Marital commitment, sexual purity, intellectual honesty, ethical fairness, and financial accountability are all options, up for discussion rather than character traits we all ought to be embracing. Even the ranks of ministry have been tainted, as we are being pressured to look the other way rather than to hold fast to the truths of Scripture. My friends, we desperately need to return to integrity, not to sinless perfection, but to absolute honesty and purity. I know this may sound impossible, so let's take a look at the life of a man who honorably carried out his political responsibilities, not for a little while, but for several decades, during the reigns of six separate kings. By now you may have guessed, the man's name was Daniel. He lived a life of integrity in a culture that lacked that. In fact, it was a culture much like our own today. I want to read for you this very interesting account in Daniel's life from The Message. And yes, I'd like to read the whole sixth chapter. Listen to The Message, beginning at Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. Darius reorganized his kingdom. He appointed 120 governors to administer all the parts of his realm. Over them were three vice-regents, one of whom was Daniel. The governors reported to the vice-regents, who made sure that everything was in order for the king. But Daniel, brimming with spirit and intelligence, so completely outclassed the other vice-regents and governors that the king decided to put him in charge of the whole kingdom. The vice-regents and governors got together to find some old scandal or skeleton in Daniel's life that they could use against him, but they couldn't dig up anything. He was totally exemplary and trustworthy. They could find no evidence of negligence or misconduct, so they finally gave up and said, "We're never going to find anything against this Daniel unless we cook up something religious." The vice regents and governors conspired together and then went to the king and said, "King Darius, live forever. We've convened your vice regents, governors, and all your leading officials and have agreed that the king should issue the following decree. For the next 30 days, no one is to pray to any god or mortal except you, O king. Anyone who disobeys will be thrown into the lion's den. Issue this decree, O king, and make it unconditional. as if written in stone, like all the laws of the Medes and the Persians. King Darius signed the decree. When Daniel learned that the decree had been signed and posted, he continued to pray just as he had always done. His house had windows in the upstairs that opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he knelt there in prayer, thanking and praising his God. The conspirators came and found him praying, asking God for help. They went straight to the king and reminded him of the royal decree that he had signed. "Did you not," they said, "sign a decree forbidding anyone to pray to any god or man except you for the next 30 days? And anyone caught doing it would be thrown into the lion's den?" "Absolutely," said the king, "written in stone, like all the laws of the Medes and Persians." Then they said, "Daniel, one of the Jewish exiles, ignores you, O king, and defies your decree. Three times a day he prays." At this, the king was very upset and tried his best to get Daniel out of the fix he had put him in. He worked at it the whole day long. But then the conspirators were back. "Remember, O king, it's the law of the Medes and Persians that the king's decree can never be changed." The king caved in and ordered Daniel brought and thrown into the lion's den. But he said to Daniel, "Your God, to whom you are so loyal, is going to get you out of this." A stone slab was placed over the opening of the den. The king sealed the cover with his signet ring and the signet rings of all his nobles, fixing Daniel's fate. The king went back to his palace. He refused supper. He couldn't sleep. He spent the night fasting. At daybreak, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. As he approached the den, he called out anxiously, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve so loyally, saved you from the lions?" "O king, live forever," said Daniel. "My God sent his angel, who closed the mouths of the lions so that they would not hurt me. I've been found innocent before God and also before you, O king. I've done nothing to harm you." When the king heard these words, he was happy. He ordered Daniel taken up out of the den. When he was hauled up, there wasn't a scratch on him. He had trusted his God. Then the king commanded that the conspirators who had informed on Daniel be thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. Before they hit the floor, the lions had them in their jaws, tearing them to pieces. King Darius published this proclamation to every race, color, and creed on earth. "Peace to you, abundant peace. I decree that Daniel's God shall be worshipped and feared in all parts of my kingdom. He is the living God, world without end. His kingdom never falls. His rule continues eternally. He is a savior and rescuer. He performs astonishing miracles in heaven and on earth. He saved Daniel from the power of the lions." From then on, Daniel was treated well during the reign of Darius and also in the following reign of Cyrus the Persian.
You're listening to Insight for Living. And if you'd like to dig deeper into today's topic, you can access helpful resources by going to insightworld.org. And now the message from Chuck Swindoll called A Plea for Integrity.
Normally, I do not struggle as much as I have this week regarding the message of this morning, but it has been quite a struggle, I confess to you. I thought surely that I should continue on in my 2 Corinthians series and take those six verses tucked away in 2 Corinthians 13 that I had been thinking about for
well, better than 2 or maybe even 3 weeks. But I couldn't get any peace on it, and I don't usually change without being real sure that God is in it. And so I came to the office early Thursday morning for God to speak to me. He spoke to me. At the time he spoke, I was sitting at my desk, and a number of my research volumes are sitting up above my head. And needless to say, after the earthquake, I was very submissive to what he was leading me to do. I am serious. While I have a little fun with you about that, I don't know of anything that creates within me a spirit quite like that of the rattling of my cage and reminding myself that God is indeed the sovereign Lord of our lives. I also must tell you that I have been troubled regarding the face of things in our country and within the family of God. My major battle has had to do with one word, one concept, which is the topic that I feel God has led me to address today. It's the subject of integrity. There seems to be a falling away, a breakdown, a compromise with integrity. I know that that word is tossed around a lot these days. It's really not new to my tongue. I've been addressing it for a number of years, as many of you who know me realize. But I haven't really talked straight about the subject as it relates to our Christian walk. Certainly haven't done so much in recent days. Seems as though it needs to be said. First of all, let me define what I mean by integrity. It's a little bit difficult to do that. Webster tells us it means an unimpaired condition, soundness. Interesting, that is exactly what the Hebrew word tome means, from tamam, to be complete, to be solid. Psalm 78, 72, he fed them according to the integrity of his heart, tome. And according to the skillfulness of his hand, speaking of David. Soundness, adherence to a moral, a code of moral, artistic, or other values. That's integrity. Integrity would be completeness. You have integrity if you complete a job, even though no one is looking. You have integrity if you keep your word, even though no one checks up on you. You keep a promise. It is the absence of duplicity. It is the opposite of hypocrisy. What you say, you do. What you declare, you, with all of your power, attempt to be. Integrity also would mean financial accountability, personal reliability, private purity. One with integrity does not manipulate other people. He or she does not seek his own self-aggrandizement. Integrity even invites constructive and necessary criticism. It's sound, it's solid, it's complete. I've made a few more notes. It evidences itself in ethical soundness, intellectual veracity, moral excellence. It keeps one from fearing the white light of examination or resisting the exacting demands of accountability. It's honesty at all cost. It's rock-like. Being rock-like in character, it won't crack when it has to stand alone, and it won't crumble though the pressure mounts. The words of Louis Adamic seem fitting. There is a certain blend of courage, integrity, character, and principle, which has no satisfactory dictionary name, but has been called different things at different times in different countries. Our American name for it is guts. I like that. It's having the guts to tell the truth, even though it may hurt you. It's having the guts not to cheat, even though you may make a better grade. It's having the guts to quote other sources rather than act like those words are yours and plagiarize. What is it not? It is not sinless perfection. A person with integrity does not live a life that's free of sin. No one does. But one with integrity quickly acknowledges, doesn't hide the wrong. There can even be integrity of workmanship, just as there is integrity of a product. An engine that falls off an airplane is said to be an engine that lacked integrity. It wasn't solid. It didn't stay connected. Some time ago, I was drawn to something that Chuck Colson wrote in a piece called Another Point of View. I quote, "I can still remember how I felt the first time I put on my Marine uniform. My chest swelled with pride as the Golden Globe, an anchor representing 200 years of the proudest military tradition, was pinned to my lapel. So for me, the Marines' Sex for Secrets scandal was devastating. How could these hand-picked young men trade their honor for a few moments of sexual gratification? Marines are supposed to treat their motto, Semper Fidelis, as next to sacred. But I was shocked even more by the public reaction to the embassy scandal. Most commentators and politicians seemed less outraged by the Marines' conduct than by the fact that the government had put these young single men in a position where they could be exploited. What are we to expect? One congressman asked indignantly. How were they supposed to satisfy their sexual urges? Such explanations reduced the Marines involved to the moral level of dogs. When they are in heat, what do you do but lock them in the basement? But surely there's more to men than that. What of honor? What of duty? Semper Fidelis. He goes on, C.S. Lewis might well have been describing this mindset when he argued in 1943 that mere knowledge of right and wrong is powerless against a person's appetites. Now get this. Rather, reason must rule the appetites by means of the spirited element, that is, loyalty to a transcendent good higher than oneself. Lewis likened reason to the head, the appetite to the stomach, and the spirited element to the chest. He summed it up well, quoting again from Lewis, "We remove the organ and demand the function. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst." My message today is that we stop laughing at honor, that we become people with guts, people with chests, so that what we sign our name to, we wrote, and we'll stand behind. That what we sell has veracity, or we'll make it right. Or what we commit ourselves to for life, we stay with for life. It's just a matter of guts. Now, in speaking on this, I could come across as the white knight, and you know me better than that. I am a man among men. I fail like everyone else. The sooner you remember that, the better we'll get along together. But I give you my word, you will know. You will know. If I have failed, I will tell you. If it needs to be told to my family, they will hear. I will not lead you to believe something is true if it is false. That is the least I can do as a minister of the gospel. The day I was ordained was the day I accepted a higher level of judgment than another profession. What else does James 3:1 mean but I will be judged by a stricter judgment because I am a teacher of the truth. And that, my friends, is an awesome responsibility. If I may, one more before we turn to the scriptures. Over 35 years ago, Elton Trueblood wrote, "It is hard to think of any job in which the moral element is lacking. The skill of the dentist is wholly irrelevant if he is unprincipled and irresponsible. There is little in that case to keep him from withdrawing teeth unnecessarily, because the patient is usually in a helpless situation. It is easy to see the harm that can be done by an unprincipled lawyer. Indeed, such a man is far more dangerous if he is skilled than if he is not skilled." Are you skilled in your profession? You are dangerous. You are in a position of trust. And in a profession, people believe in you. They believe that what comes out of your mouth is the truth. Don't lie to them. We have a ways to go in our day of rationalization and easy, laissez-faire compromise. Some of you simply need to take a good, hard look at your studies. Some of you are cheating your way through school. You can't remember when you didn't cheat on an exam. Your education is a lie. Today's the day to stop it. Today's the day to start doing what is right, to live up to the truth that you know down in your heart should mark your life. I don't care if not another soul on earth does it. You do it because it is right. Tucked away in the sixth chapter of Daniel is a wonderful story that bothered me as a little boy. Here was a good man named Daniel who wound up in a den of lions. And I wondered as a little boy, why in the world would a man, what wrong could he have done that could lead to a den of lions? Being the little boy I was extremely interested in what wrong he could have done that would lead to a den of lions. To make matters even worse, I found out when I studied the chapter that he had done what is right. In fact, it is all tied together by a story that appears before the den of lions. The king is named Darius. He's 62 years old, according to the last verse of chapter 5. Daniel is probably in his 80s. He's seen kings come and go. He's a man marked by integrity. Even though the kings have been strong and weak, vacillating and unfair, brutal and compromising, Daniel has been like a steer in a blizzard. He stood against the elements. Daniel has character. As we come into chapter 6, the two men are connected to one another, because the king has seen in Daniel that kind of integrity that it took to be in his special appointment as one of the unique members of his cabinet, called here a commissioner. Listen to the first three verses. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they should be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because, note it now, he possessed an extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom.
There's much more from this passage we need to discover. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll called A Plea for Integrity. Now, to hear Chuck's sermon in its entirety and without these broadcast announcements, you can go online and download the MP3 file or purchase the 12 CDs in the series. It's called Character Counts. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Or online, go to insightworld.org.
Now, last month, you likely heard Chuck talk about celebrating the 34th anniversary of Insight for Living and the critical deadline on June 30th when we closed the financial books on another year of ministry. Well, we're grateful to so many who stepped forward with generous fiscal year-end donations. And we're especially pleased about the growing family of friends who've chosen to automate their monthly donations to make giving simple and convenient. We call them monthly companions. This steady stream of income has helped immensely as we meet our financial obligations. And maybe today's the day you'll step forward and say, "Yes, Chuck, I'd like to become a monthly companion too." The process doesn't take a lot of time, but as a monthly companion, you can enjoy the satisfaction of knowing you're doing your part to provide Insight for Living on your station and on the internet. To become a monthly companion, go to insight.org/monthly companion. Or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And whether you become a monthly companion or just give a one-time donation today, we'll say thank you by providing the brand new Understanding Heaven Passport. This is an exclusive resource from Insight for Living. You won't find it anywhere else. It's a colorful and creative pocket-sized book designed to answer common questions about the afterlife and eternity with God. When you give, request your copy of the Understanding Heaven Passport. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. Have a great weekend, and be sure to join us Monday when Chuck Swindoll's series, Character Counts, continues on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Plea for Integrity, was copyrighted in 1987, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.